Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Are these two stories related? President Trump continues to dig in on a wall separating the U.S. from Mexico, with at least a third of the country behind him. And Republican Congressman Steve King is making news for asking in a New York Times interview, quote, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive, unquote. King is not denying that he used those words, and he may suffer consequences today when he meets with the House Republican leadership. Trump, on the other hand, framed the issue of race and the wall this way in his Oval Office address last week.
America proudly welcomes millions of lawful immigrants who enrich our society and contribute to our nation. But all Americans are hurt by uncontrolled illegal migration. It strains public resources and drives down jobs and wages. Among those hardest hit are African Americans and Hispanic Americans.
Trump in the Oval Office. Does he have a point? We'll discuss. But while the wall is literally to keep people from entering illegally, it's symbolically seen by many as one of Trump's many ways to keep America as white as possible, with the underlying belief that a whiter America is a better America. So is Steve King only saying out loud what underlies the Trump-Stephen Miller agenda? And Steve King is getting punished for it while the party pretends that Trump and they themselves are doing something different. Let's talk now about race, class, the wall, immigration, and the government shutdown with Juan Williams, Fox News commentator and co-host of The Five on Fox News Channel and author of the book, What the Hell Have You Got to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. And he's a columnist for the Capitol Hill newspaper, The Hill. He's got a piece out today called Trump's Wall is Founded on Fiction. Thanks for coming on, Juan. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure, Brian. Good to be with you.
Let me get right into the hot button questions. Trump talks the talk of legality, crime, and the rule of law when it comes to the wall. But how much do you think the subtext is white nationalism or white supremacy, to use Steve King's words, keeping America as white as possible because a white America is, in his view, a better America?
Well, there's no substance, so let's just get that out of the way. There's no substance to his claim that somehow immigration has a greater economic impact on low-income minority communities. There have been studies done. I think the last one was done by Wharton, University of Pennsylvania, in 2016, and found that, in fact, immigration increases demand for goods and services in this country. And when you have that, it generates more economic activity that's to the benefit of everyone, including low-income workers. But the second thing to say, and I think the more important thing, is this is intentionally done to try to divide blacks and immigrants, playing on the idea that there is a substantial, I think it's like 30% of blacks who have said in polls, oh, they think that immigration leads to competition for these low-income jobs. But what we can see on the ground, by the way, just to go back to the Penn study, is that if you talk to farmers, if you talk to people who are working in meat slaughtering plants and the like, they say that if without immigrants, they don't have any workers. Nobody's volunteering to, standing in line to get that job. It just doesn't exist. This is a fantasy, but it comes to come back to my point, and sorry for being sort of around the circle on this, but okay, to come back to the point, I think that this is an effort by Trump, one, to divide people on the basis of race again. I think it's quite intentional. And secondly, I think it's an appeal to kind of middle-of-the-road white voters to say, it's not about being anti-immigrant. Again, it's America first, it's pro-America to say we should be looking out for our own minority groups first. But in fact, that's just, as I've tried to explain, not true.
Well, let's linger on that for a minute, because I know there have been at least some studies, and I guess, academic studies can be all over the place sometimes on the same question, but some studies that showed that a lot of immigration, including non-college educated immigrants, does wind up helping generate a larger economy in general, but that it's generally the better off people who benefit from that, and that there is competition and the depressing of wages to some degree at the lower socioeconomic tiers. And I wonder if you see immigration at all as a political dilemma for African American leaders or populations. I'm thinking about unions. You know how organized labor used to be against a lot of immigration on exactly that economic calculation, that the more people who are here, the more there's going to be competition for low-skilled jobs, and it's going to depress the wages of union members.
Well, I mean, you go back in American history, you know, like late 1800s in New York City, you have people rioting against blacks coming up from the South post-Civil War. Jobs. So you think about the anger early in the 20th century at the influx of the Italians, you know, again, mm-hmm. low-wage workers. And so there's always, and then the organized labor people have always picked up on this because it plays to resentments that we're going to protect your jobs against these invaders, these newcomers. But what we've seen over that very same history, Brian, is that, in fact, it has not played out in that fashion. So the bigger point, I think, is does immigration, even as it generates economic activity, the bottom line is it helps upper-income people get more of the jobs and opportunities because of the economic expansion versus people at the low end of that economic scale. And again, we don't have any evidence of that except that it is very much visceral that people feel this way, that they think, oh, this new guy just showed up and, you know, is he going to compete for my job? But we don't have any, you know, statistical evidence that that's the case.
And as unions have become more diverse, they've walked away from that zero-sum equation in their political positions as well. But how much do you think the subtext of the whole wall debate is white nationalism or white supremacy?
I think there's an important element to it. I mean, again, for me, as a journalist, when I look at the wall, I think, well, okay, let's look at the case for the wall. Is this something that is effective? Is it an efficient way to, in fact, lower the rate of people crossing the border? And what comes back is, no, it's not. It's inefficient. And we already have better ways, better means and methods, if you're talking about the southern border, of policing that border. And we already have fencing and barriers in place. But I think this has a lot to do with a real sense, and especially in President Trump's base, that the demographic shifts in the country are coming too fast, Brian, that, you know, we're becoming more and more a country now made up of people of color and different ethnic groups. And there are people, especially older white Americans, who feel quite threatened by it. So I think it's a play to that resentment, to that sense of grievance.
So how much of an outlier do you think Steve King really is in his views? Is it just that he's willing to say those things out loud?
Well, I think there's some people who are willing to say it out loud because they think they get political benefit from it. And the thing about Steve King is he just keeps saying it. So sometimes people on the far right or Trump himself will say things and people say, oh, you took it in the wrong way. Oh, you have a chip on your shoulder if you're a Hispanic or a black person, an immigrant. Oh, you know, try to understand. But I mean, in the case of Steve King, you know, he says stuff like, you know, you can't restore civilization with someone else's babies. I don't know how else to interpret that. Or then he goes overseas and he's doing business, making speeches with people who are Holocaust deniers or people who are mocking interracial children. He's even dealing with the Austrian anti-immigrant neo-Nazi party. At some point, you got to say, wait a minute, this is inexcusable. There's no rational way to say, oh, we didn't get the context right with Steve King. And I think that's why you're starting to see people on the Republican Party side, in the Republican leadership in the Congress, say we have to hold him accountable. I don't know if you saw this, Brian, but Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, wrote a piece and said, you know, our party's got to be about economic opportunity and fairness, and we can't if we just make excuses for people like Steve King.
I don't know that there's been any polling on something like this among white Americans in particular, but One of Steve King's tweets from last year was, "Culture and demographics are our destiny. We can't restore our civilization with someone else's babies." That referred to refugees coming in to the country, particularly from the Middle East. I wonder how that would poll in white America. Think anybody's ever done it?
Well, I don't. I have never seen such a poll, but I don't think it would do all that well. The question in terms of polling, like voting, is would people say one thing to a pollster versus what they would do once they got in the privacy of the voting booth? But, you know, I don't think that there is any shortage of racial attitudes and opinions in America. But the thing is, when you're working in a diverse society, at some point you understand the greater benefit from working together. So to me, it would be what do people express openly, and you just don't see that kind of expression coming from anybody but, at this moment in American history, the neo-Nazis, the white nationalists, and sadly now embraced or emboldened by President Trump and the far-right wing of the Republican Party, and specifically I point to Steve King.
What do you think is going to happen to Steve King today when he meets with, I guess it's the House Republican leader, McCarthy? I don't know if others are involved in that, too.
Yeah, I think McCarthy took the lead, but I think that right now, what I've noticed is that even people like Lynn Cheney, who's just come on in the Congressional Campaign Committee, and others have said that they think that Steve King is hurting the Republican Party. It's reached that point where previously there was silence or kind of, you know, a shrug of the shoulders. Now you see people, and I don't think anyone's going to mistake McCarthy or Lynn Cheney for anything but a hardline conservative, saying that this is unacceptable and damaging to the party. It reminds me what happened after President Obama won re-election in 2012, where you saw Republicans saying in that so-called autopsy or on the election, oh, we've got to do better, we've got to do more to reach out to immigrants, to blacks, to people who are Latino in this country. And, you know, they just never did it. In fact, what happened was they got Donald Trump, who pushed on that, back on that idea, and said, no, we've got to energize the white base of the party in order to win.
Listeners, your calls for Juan Williams on what we've been talking about, or we can get into some other Washington politics if we have time. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take a call from Frank in Bloomfield. Frank, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. You bet.
I just wanted to comment on your premise that that Trump might have a subtext of a reason to have the wall built so that white supremacists and white nationalists are in understanding that it's to keep out Latinos and anybody who's not of a white descent, mm-hmm. white color. And I disagree with that. Being a Latino American, I don't agree with the illegality of people wanting to cross into this country, just freely, and forcing themselves through. I mean, as we know right now, there's thousands of people trying to get in right now. I think it's misleading.
Frank, do you remember the bipartisan congressional group that came to the White House and offered last year full wall funding for legalizing DACA and temporary protected status immigrants? And it got rejected by Trump because hardliners on immigration like Senator Tom Cotton got to him and demanded a 50% cut in legal immigration to go with it. And then Trump at that meeting said those things about S-hole countries and why can't we have more immigrants from Norway. Does that change your view on this at all? The fact that the wall is just kind of one leading edge of this larger let's stop people, especially from black and brown population countries, from coming in?
It doesn't, because we're dealing with one specific issue at hand. You might have a congressional movement led by a racist who really doesn't want Latinos and anybody of color coming into this country, and then demand half of the pop of the illegal immigration not to be of white, you know, descent, people from Norway, et cetera. But, you know, the issue right now is people coming into this country, you know, illegally. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, when people talk about people coming into this country, they like to use immigrants, you know, as a general way of you know, defining who these people are who are trying to come into this country, mm-hmm. you know, illegally. Well, and that's not a fair way to describe that because it's illegal. It doesn't matter who's trying to come into this country, you know, in that fashion. It's illegal. And it's not fair because, you know, then you have a lot of people in this country who are going to suffer some kind of consequence, economic at least. And then that's why you have these nationalists up in arms, you know, because of that.
Frank, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. You know, Juan, callers like Frank, and there's probably a lot of Americans like that, who say, you know, what I'm concerned about is legal and illegal. The case for having a secure border is common sense for any country. It makes me think sometimes, why don't the Democrats just give Trump the wall? Why hasn't this been settled years ago with a physical barrier, effective or ineffective? And then the opportunity to conflate illegal immigration with immigration would kind of go away.
Well, two key points. One occurred to me as I was listening to Frank. We're at a 20-year low, Brian, in terms of illegal crossings of that southern border. From the alarmism that comes from the White House, the Trump White House, you would never know this. You would think, oh my gosh, remember before the midterm elections, there was an invasion, this caravan where people filled with terrorists and disease, and they were more men and MS-13. This is the kind of rhetoric and energy that's put into demonizing people who are coming to the country. And in that case, just as a reminder, those people were largely desperate souls who wanted asylum and wanted asylum hearings in this country. That's what that was about. It wasn't an invasion. So, yes, there are people who at some visceral level say, oh, this is about people coming into the country illegally. But listen, if that was the case, we have had a crisis, if you will, for the last 2 years when Trump had a Republican majority in the House and the Senate, and it was never done. But suddenly now it's a crisis, and why not just give Trump what he wants so that they can make a deal? And as you pointed out to Frank, wait a second, there was such a deal on the table, and it was rejected because Trump wanted to cut legal immigration in half. So I think that, you know, you can have an emotional response. You know, Frank may live in a neighborhood where he says, I see illegal immigrants. I think, you know, why did they get in here illegally? I waited in line. I waited my turn. I went through a very difficult process to become an American. I totally understand where Frank's coming from. But again, that's anecdotal as opposed to the larger picture. And part of that larger picture, in my opinion, is that the president is playing on racial antagonisms in order to advance his own political agenda.
TK in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, TK.
Good morning, everyone. I'm sorry, I have to give pushback to that reporter. I don't know how old he is, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm 50 years old. And when I was growing up, there was plenty of black men working behind the counter as short order cooks. Going to a restaurant now, you can't find one. When I was growing up, it was plenty of black men working at these construction sites. You go to Harlem right now, you see white guys working, maybe one or two blacks, but it's mostly Hispanics. Why? Because they are the new N-word. That's why every time it's a collapse in the street or one of them falling from the building, because they don't know about the safety protocols and they're afraid to ask, could I get a lanyard? Could I get something in this hole so I don't get collapsed on? And the contractors know that, so they use them. So don't say that there's no statistics for what may have been problematic for blacks. It is problematic, and that's why we didn't vote in this last election, because a lot of black people are torn, okay? We really are. Financially, black people are being hurt. The ones that did not have a college degree are very hurt by all of this immigration. The proof is in the pudding.
Juan, talk to TK.
Well, I mean, again, I think this is anecdotal. I don't dispute anything he says. He says he sees it with his own eyes. But let me just say that when you talk about the election, one, it's overwhelming. Black people in America did not react well to Trump's language. They tremendous support for Hillary Rodham Clinton. You might argue about rate of turnout and the depressed turnout slight from what happened with President Obama, but I think that's another dynamic given that Obama was the first black president of the country. The second thing to say is he's picking up on, I think it's like a third of black Americans who say, yes, immigration is having a negative impact on black economic opportunity. But remember, 66% of black people, in other words, two-thirds, say no. And in fact, that two-thirds favors a path to legal citizenship, which is, tends to be the bar, you know, in terms of your attitudes about immigrants in the country. So I would say, you know, he may, in fact, as you know, see on the ground some guys who don't hire blacks or prefer to hire people who don't speak English or are worried about immigration coming to raid them and not willing to complain about safety issues or not willing to complain about their pay, you know, if they don't get paid or if they're treated badly or fired quickly. I can't argue with any of that. But I'm just telling you there's a larger picture, and I think the president plays on anger, resentment, grievance to try to advance himself politically with people who think that, you know what, there are too many blacks, Latinos, especially people coming from what the president has in awful language referred to as S-hole countries.
There is a long history of white employers preferring immigrants to African Americans, even black immigrants, if they come here with a Caribbean accent or something like that, have a leg up over perceived African Americans. That's real, right?
I don't think there's any doubt that it's real, because what we know is that, you know, we have all this talk about, you know, electronic systems for confirming social security numbers and the like. You know what? We still don't have it in place, Brian. Why would that be? I think it's because employers really have pushed back and said, too expensive, too difficult, I don't want to deal with it. And they take advantage of a population of immigrants that comes in here that has to worry about their citizenship status, but then doesn't say anything about taxes or low pay. So they do exploit these people. I don't think there's any argument there.
But then by that measure, there is a threat to African Americans, especially without college degrees, by a lot of immigration?
No, well, again, you'd have to look at it specifically. But for example, in a state like Texas or Arizona or even Southern California, what you see is that there, as I said to you earlier, there's no line standing at, you know, the factory gate or, you know, to pick the cabbage when you see the immigrants flee from immigration. No, there's just nobody to do the job. And then you suddenly see pressure coming from those employers on politicians saying, we need somebody to do this work in order, you know, to make a profit and keep our business. And so to me, that's very real, too. But you don't hear those stories on an anecdotal basis in the way that we've heard from our first two callers.
Let me just touch, before you go, some other breaking news this morning on the investigations. You know that the New York Times reported over the weekend that the FBI started investigating whether President Trump was working on behalf of Russia after he fired James Comey. Trump, in a Fox News interview on Saturday night, did not directly deny that. This morning, he is now directly denying it. Also, William Barr, the Attorney General nominee, whose confirmation hearings are this week, said today, or a text of what he's going to say today, got released. And he says the Mueller investigation basically should be released. So what do you make of either of those two related things?
Well, in the case of Barr, you know, the problem here is that he campaigned for the job. He's a guy who wrote a memo unsolicited and sent it to the Justice Department, to Rod Rosenstein and to then Jeff Sessions, who was, you know, the former Attorney General, saying, you know, he thought that the Mueller investigation was an extravagance, that it was a political attack on President Trump. I mean, where was this coming from? I don't know, but it apparently made an impression on President Trump, and that's why he is nominated for the job. And it's why Democrats and even some Republicans are concerned about what happens to the Mueller probe if Barr is the attorney general. At the moment, the larger point of conversation is if Mueller is allowed to finish, do we as the American people even get to see the report? Is it possible that the president and Bill Barr say, you know what, they're done, we have the report, but we're not releasing it? Because remember, Mueller works for the Justice Department. Just last week, Rudy Giuliani, the president's lawyer, said, we should be able to edit the Mueller report. What, are you kidding me? That's unbelievable.
Juan Williams, Fox News commentator and co-host of The Five on Fox News Channel and author of the book, What the Hell Have You Got to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. And he's a columnist for the Capitol Hill newspaper, The Hill. He's got a piece out today called Trump's Wall is Founded on Fiction. Juan, thanks a lot. We always appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.